feast your eyes and behold, Chickhead!
Just off the elevator to the fifth floor of the Four Seasons Resort on the coast of Lanai, I'm Schmitty, and this is Talkin' Schmidt. Today on the show is longtime friend Pancho Moller Pascal. Pancho was born in Chile and moved to the U.S., where he eventually became a professional skateboarder. He dabbled a bit in the porn industry and is currently an actor living in Los Angeles, and has starred as Sickhead in the Rob Zombie movie 31. Every time Pancho's name comes up, I immediately think of one thing, and that is the fakie tray.
So the fakie tray became a big deal because I never learned 360 flips. And then I remember one time just doing fakie 360 shove-its. It flipped all the way and I landed it with one foot. I'm like, holy shit, that was a fakie 360 flip. That's how it became so big for me, because it was something that took me like 15 years to get this feeling that I could have felt a long time ago, you know?
Also, I want to thank everyone that purchased the new Neckface long sleeve shirt. Your orders are in and shall be shipped out November 6th. For those that want one, there are still a limited supply at talkinschmidt.com. I'm out on island time this week, so not sure how next week's episode is going to work. Mahalo for all your birthday wishes, and without further ado...
Hello, this is Pancho Moller, and you're listening to Talkin' Schmidt. Love you, brother.
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Here we go again.
Just give it the all-cause try, right here.
All big dogs in.
Schmitty, what do you think, Schmitty?
96 times, Schmitty.
Thanks, Schmitty.
John, Schmitty.
Talking Schmidt.
He's so fucking busy.
He shit my pants, lad.
Your Rolodex is fucking deep.
Are you ready?
Come on, Schmidt.
I'm here for Greg Schmidt. Yeah!
All right, everybody, I have just driven from SF over the grapevines down into Los Angeles, and I have arrived at someone's house that I haven't seen in quite some time. He holds a very special place in my heart. We've filmed for several years, and we've stayed in touch, but haven't really got to catch up as well as I hope to today. Ladies, gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Ponchy.
What's up, folks?
What's up, Poncho?
How are you, Schmitty?
So good
to see you, man.
I'm hyped.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. How long you been here? This is LA.
Fuck, man. I've been here like since 2000, maybe 2004. I moved down here with one of my ex-girlfriends. Just because skateboarding was starting to die for me around then. Not die for me, but like my career professional as a professional skateboarder was done.
Right.
That's a long time ago, if you think about it. And so I moved down here with one of my ex-girlfriends, who is a complete nutcase, by the way, but I'm not going to mention her name. But she was a costume designer, so I figure you're not going to be able to do that in San Jose, really. So you have to be in the spot where you're in the limelight. So we moved to LA together, and it was, you know, it was a really good thing for me because... You know, one door closes, another one opens. I was able to find acting. But yeah, with all that, we'll get into that in a little bit. So I moved down here with her, and I've been down here now for like about 16 years.
Sweet.
It was a huge like reality check for me. You know, I was a skateboarder. Like that's all I knew my whole entire life. And then it's like you do that from the age of 13. Go to college.
Yeah.
Or travel the world skateboarding and do what you love. And that was what I did. You know, I was like, I want that one right there.
Right.
And my parents were just very supportive of it always, just because I went through so many different sports growing up and I finally found one that was good to me and that I loved and I stuck with. So yeah, with that said, like I skateboarded and I loved it and it was my first passion. Forever.
Where you were born in Santiago?
Yeah, I was born in Santiago, Chile, 1976, and lived there till like I was about 6 years old, and then my mom divorced my dad, and you know, she took me with her, and the first place in the United States I lived was Hawaii, and so I came up there, didn't know a lick of English, learned English, and then my mom remarried, and then we moved to California, and we lived there, and that's kind of where I found skateboarding.
In which part?
And I lived in Palm Desert, California.
Oh.
The town was actually called La Quinta, but like when I was a kid, I was very competitive, but I never ever saw myself as, you know, a little person.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see myself that until like about like fifth grade, you know?
Fifth
grade, when like that's when I wasn't being chosen for the teams anymore. I wasn't, you know, it was like no one wanted me, and it was sad, you know? I just, because I was good at everything, I was just smaller.
Right.
And that's when I kind of found skateboarding, or skateboarding found me. I was shopping with my mom. I just went with her to this mall, and these kids were just skateboarding this red curb for hours and hours. And I just remember watching them skate, and I just remember seeing how happy they were to be able to like just do it by yourself, uh-huh. you know? And I was like, oh man, I can do that. I can do that. And so I just stayed out watching them skate, and my mom came out, and I was like, Mom, that's what I want. That's what I want, you know. And she bought me a skateboard that Christmas, and I just never turned back.
Do you remember what the first board was?
Shit, I think it was a Christian Hissoy hammerhead.
Oh, sick.
It was a Christian Hissoy hammerhead, and I had it for a really long time, because I mean, for a kid, and you're getting like a $130 gift, like you better have that for a while, you know.
Yeah.
So I skated the shit out of it for a good 6 months, you know. But I thought it was going to last forever in that sense. You know, I wasn't really doing ollies or anything, going up transition a little bit here and there, but just skating curbs. I that's how I started.
Uh-huh.
Kind of just sidewalk surfing. And then as I started to gain momentum and meet new friends that were way better than me, it just kind of slowly started changing for me. I started kind of like understanding it more, and just starting to like, you know, learn ollies, learn what the basics, you know, kick turns, ollies, you know, like fakie ollies. And we had no noses back then, so there was no nollies going on, kick flips, you know, little, just starting, and then slowly starting to fall in love with it more and more and more and more. And it was one of those things where my parents at the time like we're like, listen, you can keep doing this because we can see that you truly love it, but you just got to get good grades. And so I, you know, that was, they always wanted me to do good in school before anything. And
right.
So yeah, I just kept up with it, and slowly but surely, I just, you know, started just getting better and better at it and loving it. And then in the year of 89, what was the video that came out? Because I was going through the whole 8th Street phase and Shackle Me Not, Hocus Pocus. But then the Questionable video
Plan B
Questionable video. And that was like, besides Video Days, that was like a big life changer for me as far as like skateboarding going to the next level. And, you know, I always try to keep up. Like I always tried to like not let anything get me down, like not my size, not anything, not with skateboarding. There's no way I can be stopped
right
in this. And so that was the time that my mom and dad, we and my brothers, we moved to New Jersey. So I went to high school in New Jersey, and that's when I met Tim O'Connor, and we became really, really good friends. I met him at the skate shop. I just, you know, it was like I was devastated moving to New Jersey from California, you know. Now you're going to deal with like the shitty winter.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like my skateboarding is just going to end. But no, like there was, skateboarding was pretty big back there. You had the shut days, you know, like.
Yeah.
And so I had my mom's, I forgot the name of the skate shop. It was called Psycho Skates. I looked up the nearest skate shop in my town where I lived in Parsippany, and the nearest skate shop was in Morristown. It was called Psycho Skates. And so she took me there and just dropped me off, you know. And I asked the skateboard or the skate shop owner where the nearest skate spot is and whatnot, and they said to go to the train station, you know, there's usually people skating there. So I just went by myself, not knowing anything, not knowing anybody, and just was skating these stairs. And sure enough, Tim and a bunch of his friends roll up, and they're probably bugging out like, who the fuck is this like fucking dwarf like skating and doing. I remember my trick was to do backside 360s, you know. I had those on lock and ollie impossibles. And so we became friends, and like The good thing is, like, I had no idea, like, all the houses in the East Coast are built with basements, and I lucked out having this, like, huge, like, 12 or 14 foot ceiling basement, and it was just paved beautifully. And so in the winter, you basically skate. If you're not going to a skate park, you're not skateboarding,
right?
You know, everything, it's snowed out
indoors.
And so I invited my friends over, and I was like, we can skate in my house. I have a quarter pipe there, you know. We can skate in the basement. And so they're like, really? So like five dudes, my friend Nick, my friend Tim Vanderbos, my friend Tim O'Connor, and Dave Corby, they all came to my house. And we used to have this girl that drove us around. Her name was Erica. You know, she was a skate rat. I think she was dating one of my buddies at the time. But she would drive us to all the skate spots. But anyways, they came to my house, and these dudes were just like so amazed that, like, holy shit, we have a spot for the winter now. Whoa. And so we started building ramps there, and we built ramps, ledges and stuff. And so that was right when Questionable Video came out. And so throughout that whole winter, when everybody wasn't skateboarding, we were fucking, like, we had a training facility skating, like, 8 hours a day, like,
that's where
right
you got
after
your
school.
Tranny skills.
Yeah, so that's where we got our tranny skills. And so by the time spring would come about, we would go street skating, and all the dudes that we skated with that had no idea about, like, my basement, they would be like, dude, we, like, got worse, and you guys just got 100%. 100 times better. Like, what's up? How's, you know, what happened? And we always kept that a big secret, because I don't want like 20, 30 kids at my house, you know? And so, yeah, that's how, like, kind of we kept up with skating in the East Coast. And then we were introduced to New York City, and we started going back and forth to New York City, like, during the summer. And I became friends with a lot of the dudes, you know, and the Supreme Heads, and just so did Tim. And, and then, that was when Tim and my buddy Nick were like, dude, you should make a sponsor me video. You know, I was like in a sophomore in high school, and they're like, make a sponsor me video.
Was Tim sponsored already?
Tim wasn't sponsored. We were sponsored by the skate shop, okay. You know? And I was like, I had no idea what a sponsor me video was. So we had a friend, and we started filming every day, filming stuff. And soon enough, the weirdest thing for me was the first time I ever saw my own self skateboard. Like, you know, on video.
Oh.
Because I always, you know, like I said, I never saw myself as a little person. I never saw myself as different. I just kind of, it was like so awkward for me to see myself skateboarding and like doing tricks and stuff. I almost like, it was really uncomfortable, you know, but as we started piling on more and more footage, I kind of just got used to it and kind of just, you got to just accept it, you know? And so we had a friend edit it, and I sent it off to like Greg Carroll. I sent it off to like a bunch of different companies. And one of the companies that responded to me was World Industries. But it was like they were doing this like side team off of World Industries. Forgot what it was going to be called. But, you know, they started sending me boxes and stuff, and I was hyped. And like, and then slowly it became to like, oh, we're only sponsoring you. We're going to build a whole handicap team or a cripple team or some shit like that. And I was just like, what the fuck, you know? But right during that time is when like the big East Coast contest happened. And it was like the Bricktown contest, the Brooklyn Banks contest, like the Playground contest. And me and Tim and all my friends, we went to all these contests. And I skated in them, I would just skate like during the practice runs and stuff. I wasn't, you know, and that's kind of how I started getting recognized. But then, do you remember Ruben that ran Thrash or Thunder?
Yeah, yeah.
I sent a video to him. Now, he was one of the people I sent a video to.
Ruben Orkin.
Yeah, Ruben Orkin. And they never got back to me, but he remembered my Sponsor Me video, and he was at those contests, and he's like, you sent a video like about 6 months ago to us, didn't you, Thunder? I'm like, yeah, I did. He's like, dude, we had no idea. You're fucking badass. Like, I want to sponsor you. Huh. And he fucking started sending me trucks. And that's when I met Greg Carroll, too.
Okay.
And Greg sponsored me. And so I just kind of slowly...
For Venture or left, Think?
No, for Think. Okay. Skateboards. Because he was running Think with Keith Cochran back then. Yep. And so he sponsored me. And then now, so I have these sponsors, and...
So first sponsor was Thunder, or?
First sponsor was Thunder, for sure. Uh-huh. And then, but at the same time, I, like, you know, Greg gave me his card. He's like, hook me up, because I sent a video to him, too.
Oh, okay.
And but none of these people got back to me. I think they thought it was some kind of joke or something. Yeah. They ended up hooking me up, and I, you know, left World Industries or whatever the company that they were going to have me skate for. And started getting packages and flowed from them. And soon enough, they flew me out to San Francisco. And that's kind of where, like, my career just started, kind of, or my skateboard reign just kind of started there.
Uh-huh.
And just kind of getting bigger and bigger. And then, you know, I made some mistakes. Like, it's just so many things when you're young are thrown at you. And you just don't know, like, what's right, what's wrong. And you don't want to, like hurt anybody's feelings, but you know, sometimes you're not happy and you think this other person's gonna make you happy from this sponsor just because your friends skate for it, but then it's just, it's not all what it seems. And I was sponsored for thing for a while now, for like a few years, and then I ended up doing something stupid and then got kicked off, and then I wasn't skating for nobody for like about like 4 years. But the good thing on that was Tim O'Connor was one of my best friends, and he was starting to blow up, and the Eastern Exposure video came out, and he had a huge part in there. I had a couple tricks in his part, and then I was living in Jersey at the time, and he came out to live with Dan Wolf. I was just skating with Love Park and all these spots with him all the time, and just kind of kept up in the scene, and he would always hook me up with boards and stuff. Dan Wolf, the filmer, his filmer at the time, moved out to Southern California, and Tim went and stayed with him, and that's when I went and stayed with him, and I would just film with him. Every time Tim was filming, I was filming, you know. Yeah. Dan was super cool, and we were just hungry, dude. We were just hungry, like skating like 8 hours a day, every day, all the spots, you know. It didn't matter, we just wanted to skate, and I think word got out that, you know, I was, you know, hungry or whatever, and Greg gave me a call at Dan's house, and he's like, hey, listen, I know you don't got nothing right now, but I see your love and your passion, and we want to give you another chance. With that said, a week later, they flew me up to Northern California,
uh-huh,
and we went on tour. And that's when I met Tim McKinney, and we did a fucking U.S. tour.
Sick.
And we did a U.S. tour, and I met Tim and a bunch of Zach Martin.
Yeah.
Who else? Joe Price. There was a bunch of dudes on the tour. Danger Hobel too. By then, Phil Schall already died, had already passed. But I knew Phil and Matt Pales and them from the first time I skated for Think. You know, that's, I remember going to visit, going to San Francisco, and I stayed with Matt Pales for a while, and I would stay with Phil, and then skating with Dave Rosenberg all the time.
Whiteley.
It was rad. And so that's kind of like the whole beginning of my skateboarding.
But before that, you shot a photo with Spike Jonze that was on the cover of Big Brother, right?
Yes.
That was when you were back east?
Yeah, that was when we were back east. What happened was, I totally skipped that. When I was skating for World Industries, which was the first sponsor I had, World Industries flew Spike Jonze out to the East Coast to New York City. And they set up this whole photo shoot with him for me to meet him and take him to my favorite spot there. And we'd get some photos. Dude, it was like 30 degrees out. Damn. It was freezing. It was like about to like be winter, you know. It was like ending fall, going into winter. It was freezing. But we had to get stuff done. And we knew some spots in New York already. We went to the Huff Ledge. Then we went to these marble stairs. I forgot what the spot was called, but I frontside nose slid the Huff Ledge before it was the Huff Ledge, and I ended up getting the cover of fucking Big Brother magazine.
Yeah.
And that was when they did that whole, like, they did Wee Man's interview, and they also did my interview in it, but I got the cover, which was pretty rad. But it was like a memorable cover for me, just because it was freezing out. My friends were like, Tim and my other buddies were all bundled up, and I'm like in a t-shirt, frontside nose sliding this like fucking 20-foot ledge.
Kind of at night, right?
Yeah, it was during the day, but it was like kind of dark, like gloomy day, like about to rain. You have to get it done.
Freezing.
And sure enough, like Spike Jonze was like big back then, but like now it's like, fuck, he's like, you know, making movies and shit.
Yeah.
And so it was rad to be able to say that my first photo, and my first was a cover, and it was with Spike Jonze.
You never had anything published before that?
No, never. Wow. No, that was the first thing. It was a cover of
Damn.
A Big Brother
and
magazine.
Big Brother was just starting. That was like early, yeah. 5'6" or something.
Yeah. So I guess that's another reason, like also because right when I got sponsored by World, they wanted this to happen really quick. So it was within a few months that they're like, all right, we need you to go. How far are you from New York? You're going to meet this dude. And so I already had the cup. So when we did the playground contest and the Bricktown contest and all that stuff,
yeah,
I had the cover of the fucking, so that's what everyone was passing around at the contest. And I was this like little Grom dude that just wanted to skate. I'm like, oh shit. Like, yeah, cover. Weird, yeah. You know, like.
And how did that change for you? How were you being received? And then when you got the cover, did that change? Or was it always kind of the same?
I mean, it was always like an awkward, weird thing at first. I was being received in a negative way, or like if I felt like a weird vibe, I would just kind of ignore it. I was always one of those dudes. Like even with like my acting career now, like it could be better if I was different. But even with skateboarding, I was always one of the dudes that like let the work speak for itself, like let my skating speak for itself. You can say all you want, but let's skate. And then afterwards, you know how it is. People accept you. They're right. Like, all right, shit. You know, just like that's how my mentality always was. And I think that's what helped me out with skateboarding.
Yeah, because I remember seeing the Big Brother and being like, holy shit, this is sick. So getting to meet Tim McKinney, what was your first impression of him? Because he loves to do first impressions on the show. What's your first impression of Tim?
Well, I didn't know what to think. This guy was just like, he was just out of his mind, like just so happy and so positive, and everything was a fucking joke. Like everything was a joke. Like I was like, is this dude ever serious? And then he would go and skate, and he would just be on another level. Like just skate anything that's put in front of him. Pools, like mini ramps, ledges, like anything, like rails. I was attracted to that. Like he, like we became friends, and we used to smoke lots of weed back then. So it was like me and him on that tour were the only ones that smoked weed. So I think, as bad as that is to say, I think that's what brought us closer together.
That was more bond.
Yeah, it was like our bond, because that's what we would do outside of skateboarding. He was just such a rad guy, and he was just so giving. You know, and he loved food, and I love food. So we were just always, you know, have that bond. So
that's about the time where you and I met.
Yeah, I believe so.
Because you started living at Tim's, basically, or staying
there. I was,
there.
Yeah, dude. Like, it's funny because...
B Street.
Yeah.
And now for another First Impressions with Timothy Donald McKinney.
First Impressions of Francisco Pascual. There's actually two. There's one before I met him, really. It was at the Milpitas Skate Park, or we'll say the Milpitas Slip and Fall Park. But I do a backside 180 kickflip over this steep hip. And he goes, hey, man, that's a steep hip. How do you do that? Years later, and I'm talking 20 years later, I see pretty much that same time era, and he's doing it. So he's pretty much capping, hey, I'm a midget. I can do it better than you, bro. Years later, here we are, pros. Together, same team, he's sleeping on my floor. And here's technically my first impression of Poncho, is him staying at my house, my parents' house. He goes, hey, Tim, you know, I heard you last night. And it was a midget telling me that in the morning. I'm like, holy shit, this dude's a riot. I love you, Poncho. I love you like a brother. I always will. I listen to you and Tim Hod. It was a fucking riot. You headbutting a bunch of penis on the soccer field. Hilarious.
Hey, it's Matt D. at DLX Skate Shop, 1831 Market at Guerrero, as in Tommy. Come see us, Real, Antihero, Crooked, Thunder, Venture, Spitfire. We are here every day of the week except the big holidays. We've got a curb, and we've got smiles on our faces. Come let us get you stoked.
Oh, big dog's in.
As I got older, I feel like karma hit me, because even when I first moved to LA, I had a two-bedroom apartment with this other dude. I'm not going to mention names, but... then it was like everyone came and lived with us, and they were staying, like it was like four people like living in our two bedroom apartment, and me and this other dude are paying rent.
Right.
And it was just like, so shit. It was rad because you had friends there, but it's like, I'm working like a real job, going and working my ass off, coming home to you guys sitting on my couch playing fucking video games all day. Like, what the fuck did you guys do with your lives or do with your day, you know? And I feel like even when I was living with Tim McKinney, I did give him some money like a month and stuff, but like I felt like maybe he must have maybe felt the same, but at least we were both skating all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think like during that time is when skateboarding slowly started to like just kind of Tim got interested in other stuff maybe, or I don't know. We were both skating a lot though. Yeah. And then I just wasn't seeing him that much no more. And then I didn't live with him anymore. Mm-hmm. The only time I would ever see him is like if we were like doing like a think demo or something, you know. It was I moved from his house straight to San Francisco and I was living there for a while. And then
what could you say about Greg C? What was some of the best advice he ever gave you?
Oh man, Greg C, man, it would never end with Greg C. He was just such a positive dude. He would give you like the sweater off his back if he always had your back for anything. There's not many people that just like took me in and just like would like allowed me to do what I do and give you opportunities. There's very few people in life that just believe in you and give you that opportunity to shine. And like all I could say for Greg is that that's one of the things he did for me. Like even when I first came out, he gave me a place to stay, you know. He introduced me to Mike Carroll, who was huge at the time, and he was like an older brother, man, and he had my back.
Yeah,
he has everybody's back, even till this day. I mean, it's so everyone goes their own ways nowadays, and fuck, I mean, if you're listening to this, thank you so much, man, for just always being there for me and for us, you know. It was fuck, man, I know that we were hard to deal with. I mean,
leather bunch of drug
addicts, skateboarders, like just out of their minds, like
yeah,
that's hard to deal with. I remember one of the things, Schmitty, is when like my skateboard career ended and stuff, and I met my wife. I remember I was like kind of transitioning of like, what the hell do I do? What do I want to do? And she was like, you should stick with skateboarding and, you know, try to do something in that field. Like maybe like, you know, you could be a team manager. And I was like, fuck that. Like the hell that we put like Greg through and every other manager we had. I'm like, these fucking skateboarders would just chew me up and spit me out. Yeah. Like, fuck that. No way.
Oh, man. I've told this story several times, so people know my perspective, but now it's time, if you can remember, to tell your perspective. Mm-hmm. It was the first day Pat Duffy got on to Think, and we met him in San Francisco.
The China Banks.
Yeah. Do you remember what you said to me, though?
What did I say to you? I don't remember.
This one cracks me up so hard. You're like, Schmitty, Duffy just looked over at you at the corner of his eyes. He's like, great, I went from Trinansky to Schmitty.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, yep. And he said he went from Danny Way to Poncho.
That's probably what he was thinking, too. He's like, how did I go from Danny Way to this little fuck?
And then he backtailed fucking China Bank. Yes. And we're like, what? And then
what? He all did that. All was that the same day? No, that was a different
but
day.
That came shortly after.
Yeah, fuck. But yeah, no, he backside tells the China Banks, which was just impossible to skateboard. But he figured out a way to do it. Like not many people do. Like there's very few, like Tim McKinney, Phil Schau, Dandre Hobel, Dennis Buznitz, and fucking Pat Duffy. Who else? Oh, Sean Young.
Oh yeah.
Julian Stranger. Okay, that's like eight people I named. I don't think anybody else could fucking skate. Or it's if they tough. Did, I didn't. I never saw any footage of it.
Yeah, there's
anything.
Some new kids killing it too, but like, yeah. I remember Drobel board slid over the bench.
Yeah.
First person to do something on the lip over the bench. Nobody did anything over the bench on the lip for like 10 more years after that.
Did someone do something? What else?
Recently, people have done. Somebody backtailed over the bench.
Holy crap! Yeah, so, that's amazing.
Yeah, but yeah, it's not an easy place to skate. What was some one of the raddest times you had with Duffy? Because you guys were on Pyro together, right?
Oh yes, Pyro.
Pyro.
I remember actually. Because I remember being on tour in Germany with Pat Duffy and Tim McKinney because we were the only dudes that's agreed to skate for this fucking shitty shoe company. It was like skating with fucking cinder blocks on your feet.
Schnabel.
And Jens was a good, kind-hearted team manager. That's all I would say about him. But I remember like just being on this tour. We had the day off that day, and we're like, "Oh, let's just go get breakfast." And we ditched Schnabel. And so we ditched him and we went to go get breakfast. And when we ended up meeting some people there, and we're like, fuck it, let's just drink. We have nothing else to do. And we're like, yeah, but it's not going to pay for our drinks. And none of us had any money. And we were just like, no, we'll just kind of figure it out. And we worked it out with like the waiter that to charge our, we just kept getting screwdrivers.
Yeah.
And we just had the waiter put it down as orange juice. So when Jens came and got like the bill, he was like, $200 in orange juice, and we're just completely fucked up, all like all three of us, and just laughing, putting this dude through hell. And then like another thing I remember is waking up in the morning and being like, all right, I don't know where Tim or fucking Duffy are, but we have a demo today. I'm gonna go and I'm gonna fucking kill this demo. It's gonna be awesome. Mm-hmm. We're going to this rad spot. And me and Jens and like are waiting for these two. We're like, where are they? Where are they? And finally, they show up like right before we're about to leave to the demo. And Pat's like, they're just fucked up. They were partying all night. And Pat like he's like gives me this pill. He's like, here, take it. I'm like, what is it? I'm like, he's like, no, just take it, just take it. You know, it's like vitamin C or something. I'm like, all right, whatever. I take it, and like fucking like an hour later, we get to this demo. It was fucking ecstasy. And so we get to this demo. I'm like, whoa, this is feeling weird, you know? And then These two fuckers are on ecstasy too. And Jens is just like this. But I never had so much fun skateboarding. Like it was, I had a blast. The demo was awesome. Uh-huh. All the kids were dope. Like we just had a good time. And it was like, it was something that could have gone really, really bad.
Yeah.
But it didn't. But I remember having that experience with both of those dudes. It was such a fun time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, we're in Germany, like pro skateboarders just loving life.
Living it up.
Living it up, yeah, with Jens.
And then from living it up in Germany, moving in to a garage with Argentina's hungriest skateboarder, the Butcher.
Oh, yeah, the Butcher. No, that dude was, we're family, man. I remember he first got on Think, and then we just, you know, whoever you're skating with, like I remember there were just being people that would just come and stay at our house. But yeah, we lived, Joey Turchet was able to get us a spot where he used to live.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like this fucking, it was like in a garage. It was like the size of a tool shed or something, but we made it work. And me and the Butcher lived there, and we had bunk beds, and then it was like a one room studio. And then like in our kitchen was our shower as well. And it was hell, but it was only $420 a month. So
yeah,
that was what was awesome. And still all we wanted to do was skateboard.
It was like one block away from Metate.
Yeah, yeah. And then we'd always go to that 1984 club.
Oh, Cats Club. Yeah. Oh, shit.
That was a blast.
What was like the most hectic thing that you saw at Cats Club? There was so many crazy nights, like girls really throwing glasses.
It was just, that's what happened, Schmitty, was like, as I got a little older, my skateboarding slowly started slowing down, not because I was getting older, but because I just wanted to party.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of like what, like I wish there was someone there to tell me, and not tell me, but like it's all up to you. Like, you know, when you're in that mind state and you're hanging out with all the dudes, you know, like it just, partying took a toll on me. And so that's what slowly started happening. And it took a while to find skateboarding again. And then as I started to find it again, it was just kind of starting, it was over, you know?
How did the fakie tray become such a big deal for our crew?
Oh my God. Okay. So the fakie tray became a big deal because I never learned 360 flips. And I had it in my head that I couldn't do them because I was a little person, because I was a dwarf. My legs weren't long enough and I didn't jump high enough for it to spin around like through my legs and stuff. And then I remember one time just doing fakie 360 shove-its, And then it flipped all the way, and I landed it with one foot. I'm like, holy shit, that was a fakie 360 flip. And then I tried it a few more times, and I landed it. And I'm like, oh my God, like for like the past 15 years, I've convinced myself I can't do a 360 flip, and I just did a fucking fakie 360 flip third try after ever trying it.
Yeah.
And so that's how it became so big for me, because it was something that, like, I told myself, I convinced myself that I could never do, and then all I had to do was try it. And then slowly then, like, I started learning 360 flips. I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Like, why did it take so long? And I think it was such a big deal for me,
uh-huh,
because it felt so good.
Right.
That I'm like, God, it took me like 15 years to get this feeling that I could have felt a long time ago, you know?
Wow.
And then the fakie tray flip was just like, I think like I always wanted to film it in lines. And then like whenever like you weren't filming, I would do it. And then you would start filming and it just, the pressure was on. It just wouldn't happen. Dude. And then
Diego would call me and be like, dude, the session today was so sick. Punchy, fakie tray.
No, it was just... So that's kind of how it became so big.
Yeah, we used to always say, fakie tray. Fuck. Just because, going back a minute, when you left Think for a hiatus and came back, you basically were trying to get on another
I was
team
trying
or
to get on this skateboard company. I forgot what it was even called. I think it was called Clean or something.
Uh-huh.
And these two Russian twins were on it. And then Carl Watson was on it. And I was like skating Embarcadero a lot and became friends with them, and all that stuff is so clicky down there. And you know, I had no idea. I was just young, and I wanted to be on the teams that my friends were on. And so I slowly, you know, started like, you know, trying to get on them behind Greg's back or behind. And it was just something like,
I'm
like,
they catch you riding one of their boards.
Yeah. I think that's what happened. Probably. And Greg was like, is this what you want? Because this is what you want, you know,
uh-huh,
all good. We just, you know, can't flow you. And it ended on good terms.
Okay.
But it was also very childish on my behalf to like go from Think, this skateboard team that, or the skateboard company that lasted freaking for decades and decades, to go to this like little shitty company that lasted for a year, you know? Like, what was I thinking? I was just clueless.
Yeah, but it's the same thing when you get caught up with your crew. Like, it's very persuasive at a young age that you're like, oh, these are the cool guys, or this is my guys. I want to skate with them, whatever.
Yeah.
Remember that guy, Dog?
Yeah, I do remember. Oh, Dog.
I forget his name.
He got like on Think. He was on Think for like maybe like a day or
he wore
two.
Tank tops, and he was like tech. He was trying to like switch trade down like the gnarliest shit.
Yeah, like
ever.
And he wouldn't even do anything else. Yeah, and then I remember him like going to like a couple skateboard demos with us, and there was like all tranny.
Yeah.
And he couldn't even skate anything. He could barely drop in. It was like watching someone like learn how to skateboard again. And Greg was just like, nope, no way.
Fuck. After that, can we get a little into the adult film industry?
Yeah, of course.
That was kind of the transitional piece, right?
That was, you know, the skateboard world brought you in. You know, you go to these skateboard conventions. There was the one in Long Beach, and then there was also the one in San Diego. I remember being at the one in San Diego, and you know, it's just one big party. You got all the Black Flies people there. You have all their models there. You have like, it's like a whole, it's not just skateboarding.
Yeah,
it's
the Reef Girls.
Yeah, it's like a whole different world there that, you know, and I remember just being at that event, I think it was the Long Beach one, and having this dude walk up to me, and he had his like Black Flies on, and he had like his like hair that looks like it's messed up, but that's just the way it is, you know. And he walked up to me, he's like, hey man, like I know who you are, and I think we could make some good money together. I direct pornos, and you know, I think you would be really good at one. You have a physique, like, you know, like, and I think the girls would love you. It looks like the girls are loving you now.
Uh-huh.
And I'll, you know, and you would get paid good money. And I was just like, naive and stupid and just, you know, at the time, like, sex was fun. It always is. But I took his card and, like, I kind of, like, looked him up a little bit and hit him up, like, 3 weeks later. I was going back to L.A. and I was like, hey, like, let's see what we can do. And he's like, I was like, how much does it pay? And he's like, $1,000. I was like, and for us, like, skating for the skateboard companies I skated for, I wasn't making $1,000. I mean, I would make $1,000 in a month.
Yeah.
You know, not in one day.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, holy shit, $1,000. I think it was just money just kind of took over.
Right.
And I didn't think about the consequences or what could happen. I didn't even really think about that at all. And I came to LA and it was one of the scariest. I always played it off like it wasn't. But it was like such a dark world, dude.
Was the first time like anxiety? Like, what was it?
Fuck, dude. It was, I mean, the girls were super hot. And
did you have to get kind of fucked up to get yourself?
No, I didn't. Oh. I didn't. It was like, it was like a regular job. It like, okay, your call time is at 8 a.m. and then we're going to take you to the skate spot, this ditch that everyone skates, and then you're going to be fucking by 9, you know, and then you'll be done by like 9:45 or 9 or 10 o'clock. It was like, it was just planned out because these dudes are businessmen. They have other scenes to shoot throughout the day to,
right,
you know, make their money and make it happen. So I went and did it. I got dropped off and we went to skating and that was all fine and dandy, like at this ditch. And then when we went to shoot this thing, it was just such a weird, like, I didn't know. It was just so dark and I was like so scared. I felt like a little boy. And I was like, is what I'm doing okay? Is this okay? You know what I'm doing? And then the girl came in. I think they kind of like told her, they're like, all right, it's this dude's first time. Uh-huh. You know, you got to like really work with him. So she let, you know, was just, she was like the girlfriend I never had. And
show him the ropes.
Yeah, showed me the ropes. And one thing led to another. And then we shot something and then it was done. And I went about my day. It took like an hour. Couple months later, this thing comes out and I'm just like, what the fuck did I do? What did I do? And then I didn't realize that it would like get big in like the skateboard world. I didn't really, because it was just something that like took an hour.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, how could this be so big?
That's what she said.
I didn't think about it. And then with all the drugs and like the fucking drinking and like just the partying I was doing, I just wasn't that I even didn't even think about it. I just didn't even care anymore. I was like, fuck it. Who cares? Whatever. And then like I stayed in touch with these dudes. And so, yeah, you know, it's a part of my life that I don't regret. I, if anything, I learned from it. I was very young, naive, and I did it. All I can say is, fuck, man. It's a dark world.
Yeah.
It's a crazy one. And
how did the name Little Romeo come up?
They gave it to me, actually.
Like that first gig?
Yeah, that first gig. We were like, we got to think of a name for you. And you're kind of, you know, like a little Casanova guy. Oh, Little Romeo, you know? And that's kind of how that came up. And it just kind of went from there. It was funny. I went to a party with my wife like about 6 months ago. And it was like my friend who's a skater it was his housewarming party. He had some skater friends there. And we go there and one of his friends was like, oh, Little Romeo, you know, and I'm there with my wife and I got married. I had to spill all the beans. So there's no surprises with us.
Yeah.
And she's so awesome in a sense. She's like, hey, what you did before we met, I have no control of that, you know? And, you know, if anything, like I said, you learn from it, but I can't like hate you for what you did before you met me or any of that. Whereas I've had girlfriends that's like deal breaker.
Right. Know? Did that world cross in at all to the acting world?
No,
like, none of all. Those connections helped you.
No, after 2002, which was the last one I ever did, I only did 4 of them. I feel like I got some like rap, like I was this like fucking porn star or something. And I was like nowhere near that. Like porn stars are dudes that make a living off of it that are like, that's their bread and butter. That's what they do every day. That's their fucking job. I didn't have that. Like, you know, it was just not like that for me. And I just want to kind of throw it out there that I was never a fucking porn star.
Right.
I fucking dabbled in it a couple times and that's fucking it. You know, I'm scared of it. Yeah, no, it never crossed paths. Like, what happened was when I first moved to LA, I got a huge reality check. I had to get, like, my first job I ever had, you know. I was working at a restaurant called the Saddle Ranch. It's on Sunset. It's a steakhouse, but it's also, like, a place where lots of industry people go for lunch, you know, like, in the acting world.
So, and in the producers.
Yeah, producers, managers, agents, just directors, whatnot. And I was a host and at the time, and it was right after my skateboard career died. And this manager guy just came up to me, like, he ate and did his thing. But at the end of the night, he's like, "Hey, listen, I'm a talent manager. I don't know if you're into acting or not, but I could see us making a lot of money together. You got a good look. I mean, you're different. You're unique. I think, you know, fuck, man, give me a call." And I was kind of confused because I wasn't in acting at all or into it. Like, just wasn't a career I saw myself in yet. And like, when you're like on a downer like that, like when you were on such a high and now you're like on this downer of like trying to figure out like what you're going to do with your life, like, it's kind of hard to believe in yourself. And I didn't really believe in myself. And I was going through a breakup at the time and it was just really shitty. And so I got his car and I you know, I was like, fuck, what the hell? I called him like about like 5 days later and he sent me on a couple jobs. And finally, like, after the third time, he sent me on something. Like, we met up first, told me what he was going to do for me, what it was going to be about, what we're trying in theatrical and commercial work, you know, start small.
Yeah.
Start with co-star roles. And but he's like, "There's this audition for this John Mellencamp music video. It's specifically for a little person that's your age, you know, your look. I'm going to send you on that. Let's see what happens."
And that was the guy that came into the restaurant?
Yeah, yeah. And I got sent on that and I just booked it. It was no callback. I just booked it. I made, and I went and shot in like, in it was like they shot in Lemoore or Hanford, actually. They shot in Hanford, the
Little
town of Hanford for like 5 days. We went and shot this music video with John Mellencamp.
Is it on a green screen?
No, it's not.
You're
on
really on a bike?
Yeah, I was really on a bike.
I love that,
you know,
video.
It was like a tribe. Yeah, and it was a pretty awesome experience because I hadn't felt a high like that since skateboarding. And the high wasn't from shooting it, but the high was from the visualization of watching it afterwards and seeing how it affected people.
Right.
Because it was just, it's a music video. I mean, we didn't have no dialogue, but the people that I was working with, like, they were real actors. Real, the girl that was in the wheelchair was like really an actress.
Uh-huh.
And so she wanted to have real conversations and be really speaking and not to just make it look like that for the camera, but really get into these characters that I had like no idea about this like world. And so I just went along with it. And I was like, "Holy shit, this is crazy."
Wow.
And then I just remember, like, I'm no good at this, but it was fun. It was a cool experience. And then whatever they did with the editing, man, it was just such a beautiful music video. And then, like, the paycheck was like, I got a $5,000 paycheck for working for 4 days.
Wow.
You know, I didn't get that from skateboarding for months. You know what I mean? So that was, like, that was big money for me.
Mm.
I think for anybody, but also it was like, and then when I saw the music video and just saw how it affected like some of my friends and just women in general, my mom, and just how it affected me, like how it made me look, like I fell in love with it. And I'm like, this is what I'm going to do.
Sick.
This is what I'm going to do. And I started taking all kinds of acting classes. I spent so much money on these acting classes because coming from a skateboard, like the hardest part for me with acting was coming from this macho skateboard world where if you don't try something, you're a fucking pussy.
Yeah.
Or you're a fucking faggot, you know? Like, that's just the way we talked. We don't really mean anything by it, but it's just, that's the way we were. So it was really hard for me to find triggers that allow me to be super vulnerable and be emotionally there. And so I took a lot of acting classes and some of them worked, some of them didn't. And then slowly, that became my addiction. Was being able to put up work and put up scenes. And then slowly I started going to school for it. And then I got into the actor studio, the world-renowned actor studio. I auditioned for it and then became a finalist. And then within the finalists, you have to take all these tests to become a lifetime member. And it took me 5 years.
Wow.
But it's like taking classes every day there. The beautiful thing about the actor studio it's method acting, but it's also, you can't pay money to get in. You have to audition and you have to be good. And so that was already great. And then from there, after you become a working finalist, you get free classes for the rest of your life.
Oh, sick.
And so, but then with that said, you have to take finals, and there's only one final a year. And within that final, it'll either move you up to a lifetime member, which is huge, or you'll just stay a working finalist. So for like 6 years, I stayed a working finalist. And then finally, about a year and a half ago, I passed my final and I became a lifetime member of the Actors Studio. But it was just something that, you know, it was just like skateboarding. I wasn't one of those skateboarders that could just pick up a board and be good. I had to skateboard every day, every fucking day, 8 hours a day to kind of even get to the level I was at one point. And it was, so that's just practice, practice, practice. Sure. And I kind of just thought of acting this way. I'm like, I have to, it's just like skateboarding. You just got to keep doing it, repetition. Keep doing it. Repetition, repetition. And I think that passion like opened up my eyes and it allowed me to have breakthroughs in acting. And then, you know, it just kind of leapt from there. It's still such an unstable business for me.
Yeah.
But I love it. And I don't really see myself doing anything else right now.
Did you do something Upright Citizens Brigade?
Yeah, I did UCB. And that's Upright Citizens Brigades, which is improvisation. It's like Saturday Night Live stuff.
Yeah.
And there's different levels of that. I got to the second level, but I just couldn't afford it. It's expensive. It's really like, these are classes that take a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
And they're well worth it, but I just didn't have it at the time. It keeps you able to keep moving without stopping the scene just because there's no dialogue.
You're just reacting.
Yeah, you're exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty, that's not easy.
No, it's not. And people can get in their head over it, but you gotta just know the rules. Yeah.
Then what? How did you meet up with Rob Zombie?
Oh, shit. Yeah. Well,
Punch has got a new flick out, Three from Hell.
Yeah, Three from Hell. And then I also got Candy Corn, which is another horror film. But I met with Rob Zombie. I went out on an audition. The audition was for Beethoven 666. That's what the movie was called. That's what the credits said. Beethoven 66. There was no director on it, you know, and the dialogue was just like, the subtext was that you're a killer clown. Here's some dialogue. Let's see what you do with that. I go into the room, you know, and I had read for this lady before. And I booked something with her before, the casting director. It's a very small world. But the first thing she told me was like, hey, I was like, hey, Nicole, what's up? How's it going? She's like, oh, good to see you. She's like, whatever you do, don't fucking scream the whole time and run around. So I'm like thinking, okay, that's what everybody else did. I wasn't going to do that anyway. Yeah. But all right, thank you, Nicole. And so I just, you know, brought this character to life, this fucking clown, in the best way I knew how. And I ended up booking it, and that's when my manager called me at the time was like, hey, so you booked the movie. It's a Rob Zombie movie, and I was just such a fucking huge fan already. It starts shooting next week. He wants to meet you right away. So, yeah, the fitting, the lighting test, and all that. So I was just so excited, you know. This is, like, the biggest thing ever, and it's Rob Zombie, you know. He makes some of my favorite films. And so I went to meet him, you know, and he was just like, all right, yeah, you know, we met. It was cool. He's like, this is kind of like the idea I have for you is I want you to be a Nazi Hitler clown. I'm like, you want me to what? And so that was the first character from 30. It was the first Rob Zombie movie I did was 31. And so that's where I played a Nazi Hitler clown. But also he's like, in your dialogue or in your resume, it says that you can speak Spanish. I'm like, yeah, it's my first language. He's like, I want you to speak Spanish now with this character. So I'm like, what the fuck? Like, all right. So I start doing all my dialogue in Spanish. But at the same time, it's like a lighting test. You have all the producers there. The lighting test, since we're wearing makeup, they want to see how the light looks against your makeup. We're also using Heath Ledger's makeup that he used in the as a Joker, which is this fucking like makeup that when you get hit, it flakes off and you can see like dust particles in the light. So they wanted to test that, and they wanted just to test out like the dialogue, the character, and all that. So I'm trying to like sit there and like fucking translate the words that Rob wrote in my head, like into Spanish, and make them sound crazy. Uh-huh. And sometimes it just doesn't work. Like the words just don't translate right. It softens it, you know, or it makes it just worse. But then I think about it and I'm looking at all these fucking people, like, dude, like literally like 50 people, producers and all the other actors, because everyone's doing the lighting tests. And I'm just like, no one here knows Spanish.
Right.
I'm like, I could say whatever I want and no one's going to know anything. Like Diego would love this.
Yeah.
And so I just start saying the worst shit, like fucked up shit in Spanish. And then Rob's like, all right, cut. And he walks up to me. He's like, oh, he's like, dude, he's like, that was fucking brilliant, dude. He's like, all your dialogue is changing into Spanish now. That was the sickest fucking shit I ever seen. Well, you know, and I was like, but you're going to subtitle it, right? He's like, no, he's like, something about someone that wants to kill you. And you don't know what the fuck they're saying. It's just creepy. So awesome. So that's how I started working with Rob, you know, and I was the only one that had to audition for this movie. Whoa. Because everybody else, he recycles his actors and he uses them again if he likes them. So I was the only one that auditioned for this movie. So that's how I met Rob. Now we fast forward to like about 3 years later, about a year and a half ago, I get an email from Rob and he's like, hey, dude, it's movie time again. I'm not sure if you're familiar with my movie, The Devil's Rejects, but I just wrote a follow-up to it, and I wrote a part for you. It's completely opposite of your other character. Are you down? And I'm like, dude, Rob Zombie just wrote me into the sequel of The Devil's Rejects. I'm like, fuck yeah. I'm down. So we shot that. Like, it was awesome experience, and then it comes out on a Monday or Tuesday. It'll be out on Blu-ray. They have one more limited theater release on this Monday, October 14th. But then it comes out on Blu-ray and Amazon Prime and iTunes on October 15th. It's called Three from Hell. And then I did another movie with this guy named Josh Hasty, who's a director, writer. And I met him in shooting the behind-the-scenes footage of 31. He shot like the documentary of the making of 31 called In Hell, Everybody Loves Popcorn. And we just stayed good friends. He wrote a movie and we ended up getting financing for it. It's called Candy Corn. It took 2.5 years to film.
Whoa.
He's like a jack of all trades. He scored it. He sound mixed it. He color corrected it. Sure. He edited the whole thing, and it came out literally the day after Three from Hell came out. So okay. I had like two movies come out back to back, and it was like, fuck, dude, this is awesome, you know? And so I'm kind of riding that wave right now and just, it feels really good, and dude, I'm so grateful and happy. But amazing. You know what? I fucking work hard, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I work hard, and, you know, it's so great to just see your work pay off, you know, because acting is different as far as skateboarding. Acting is, it's a waiting game. You film it, and it could either be edited and come out within a year, or it could take 3 years. So uh-huh. Just a waiting game. Like, you know, wow. You have this shit, this golden nugget, that's either comes out right away or it just doesn't come out for 3 years, you know?
Do they pay you right away or not?
Yeah, you get paid right away. The way it works is you get paid right away. You get your daily rate, or you get like a buyout if it's non-union.
Uh-huh.
But also then when it comes out, you get residuals. You start getting residuals from like the Blu-ray sales, from the Amazon Prime, all that stuff, which slowly starts to pay off.
Yeah.
But it's a huge waiting game. You got to be so patient for it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's all worth it, because you love what you do, you know? And if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah, that's what skateboarding is, too.
That's what skateboarding was for me. I told people were like, I'm like, dude, skateboarding was something, the best way I can describe it was something that brought so much joy to my life, and it made me so happy, and it just bought, like, it just, the progression, it was just something I was going to do whether I was getting paid for it or not.
Yeah,
it just happened that I got to be paid for it.
That's what we always say.
Yeah.
Did you get any negative feedback and shit from the Swaz Hitler clown?
The swastika, I did. There was some negative feedback, and I remember people saying, like, I didn't realize you were racist and all this stuff. And I'm like, listen, dude, it's a character. As an actor, if you get to the opportunity to impersonate, like, one of the mass killers of all time, Like, that's like a huge opportunity to do it in your own way with Rob Zombie's twist. Like, fucking why not? It doesn't mean I'm it's a character. That's it. That's all. And then the way the Spanish worked for me, because with all the characters you do, you know, you gotta believe it. Because if you don't believe what you're saying as you're bringing these characters to life, then nobody else is gonna. So the Spanish was kind of weird for me. But then I also thought about, like, you know, after the war, like, a lot of the Nazis that didn't die in Germany migrated to places like Spain, Chile, Argentina. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, that's when the table started turning of like, oh, shit, Dr. Right. Joseph Mengele, the angel of death, he never died. And he ended up in Argentina or Chile. And, you know, he found a little dude and he fucking, like, bred him. He, like, brought him up as being this hateful, fucked up dude, doing all this, like, fucking experiments with him, electric shock therapy, all this shit to just make him a hateful bastard. Now you have fucking Sickhead. Now Sickhead's alive, and that's why he speaks Spanish. You know, so all these little
that's
things
his name,
that you
Sickhead?
Do. Yeah, his name is, and he's fucked up. If you ever get to see it, yeah,
no, for sure.
Yeah, you'll watch it and be like, holy shit, okay. Poncho is fucking crazy. Mierda. But it was like the first thing of my, what's crazy, Schmitty, too, is like after doing this Rob Zombie film, I had no idea it existed, but you know how there's Comic Cons and stuff like that?
Yeah.
But there's this whole horror convention world.
Oh, yeah.
And it's insane, man. It's crazy. Like, these people, like, these loyal fans that just love horror, and, you know, like all of us, they're outcasts in the real world, but then they come to this place and they can be themselves, and
right,
and it's rad, you know, and
super fans,
yeah, so super fans, and it kind of introduced me to that, and, you know, so I embraced it. It's rad.
Nice. That kind of reminded me of something. Remember you shot a photo and it was in Slap and you were wearing Du Bois shirt?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it said racist
yes,
over
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then it came out. And then, like, do you want to tell that story?
Yeah. Okay. So that was when we did a Vancouver tour.
It was like
Canada
in the 90s,
tour.
Right?
We did a Canada tour and our photographer that was traveling with us was Brian Gaberman. Super cool dude. Awesome photographer. And you know, every tour you do, there's you have your skateboard filmer, your team filmer, and then you also got like the photographer from whatever magazine's going to cover the story,
right?
Or the tour, the story. But Brian Gaberman was our photographer, and I remember do you remember going to Thrasher? I mean, I'm sure you still do.
Yeah,
we just fucking go in there and whoever was working the warehouse
raid.
We would just raid that warehouse, dude.
McKetty still begs for the raid. Come on, let me go Ron Allen on that warehouse.
But we, you know, before you start tour, you go and raid the warehouse, the Think warehouse, raid the Venture warehouse, raid the Thrasher warehouse, because they're all so close together. And I like this shirt, you know, and I just remember Brian Gaberman, you know, he's Jewish, and he wrote racist on it, and I didn't really think anything of it because I'm not racist. I didn't know Jason Jesse at all, to be honest. I never met him. And I was just, you know, Brian Gaberman's our photographer. He's my friend and whatever, you know. And I remember he wrote it. And then, like, sure enough, I get a fucking photo. The front side flip. Front side flip. It comes out and fuck, dude. And I don't even know like why, like, cause Brian's the one that edited, I think.
Yeah.
You know, he edited his article. I don't know why he chose that photo.
Makes more sense. I didn't know he wrote it.
Yeah. Well, he's the photographer of it. And he, I don't know why he chose that photo. That we did a lot of photos, but I remember getting schlack for it, I don't know how long it took, but I think Jason Jesse confronted me, or he confronted Brian, or I don't know what happened. They squashed it all and they settled it all, and everyone's friends. Uh-huh. Then that came out, and I think I got a phone call from either, I think Jason Jesse called me up and asked me what was the deal with that, and then I explained to him what happened, and then they talked, and I think they settled it, and I think Brian was really, really bummed he did that.
Okay.
And because he really got to know Jason Jesse. I don't know why he would say that, because first time in talking to Jason Jesse, when he gave me that phone, he seemed like a fucking pretty cool dude. He
didn't
seem racist to me, you know? It wasn't even something I went along with. It was just something that happened and I just didn't really care.
Okay. I talked to, he said that you came to Consolidated one day and he brought you upstairs and he was like, could you sign the wall or something like that?
Yeah, it might have been something like that. Like, I know that I got a phone call from him as well. But yeah, I mean, it might have, it could have been something like that too. And I was just kind of put on the spot.
Right.
But it was something, like I said, I didn't like really think of it being anything bad at the time. I just didn't think nothing of it, to be honest. I didn't know it was going to hurt someone's feelings or any of that. I was fucking clueless to that.
I know we all were. But, shit, I've taken a lot of your time. What is going on now? What you got a 9-to-5 job, or are you just only acting, or what?
No, I don't only act. I work for Monster Energy, like doing brand ambassador stuff. I don't work for them as much right now. And then I,
you go to the events and stuff?
Yeah, I do the events and stuff like that. And then I also work for my friend's company, this cookware company, that we do road shows, like in Costco's. We do these 10-day road shows where we're demonstrating this cookware, cooking on it and showing what it does, like that it's, you know, there's no chemicals in it. You can use metal in it, whatnot. But I work for him like a couple days of the road show too. And he does like 2 road shows a month and they're all here, Southern California. And so it's easy work. I'm good at it. It's chill. And then it allows me to still focus like 100% on my acting. Sick. So right now what I have is I have these 2-3 movies coming out. One of them's a Christmas movie that comes out in a couple, I think next week, but that will only be like during the season. Mm-hmm. And then it'll go out on DVD. It's called Santa Fake. I got to work with the fucking Lawnmower Man and Judd Nelson
from
Breakfast Club.
No way.
You know, so yeah. So Jeff Fahey and Judd Nelson in this movie. It's like a comedy fucking Christmas musical movie. I don't sing in it because I'm not a singer, but other people do. But we just have some pretty cool, like, you know, fun scenes in there. And then I got the Candy Corn movie coming out, and then the Three from Hell coming out. So at this point, like, I have other stuff in the works that are kind of sitting on the shelves, like we were talking about,
yeah,
like The Waiting Game. So I'm just kind of chilling and waiting for these movies to be out, breathe a little bit, see what happens. Because sometimes that's what happens, that's what catapults you to the next level, is, you know, people seeing your work and going, okay, this guy can play all kinds of different characters. Just a matter of fact, I have a writer that I can write him into this, or they already have something, an idea, you know. So that's one of the things that's cool about acting. But also it's really weird sometimes too, because I feel, especially with the industry, that they don't see me as a human being still. You know, they see me as this kind of like mystical creature, like an elf or a leprechaun or a fucking troll, these things that don't even exist, you know, where you kind of, I'm trying to break through that, and slowly I am, right, and working with the right people, but it's still like, it's like I'm not like your everyday man still. And it's okay, though. It's okay.
Has Game of Thrones helped with that?
Like, it's helped him.
Peter Dinklage.
It's helped Peter Dinklage.
Just him.
It's helped just him.
It hasn't rubbed off onto...
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. And that's fine. You know, everyone is their own person. You know what was crazy when I first moved down here was just being called fucking wee man all the time.
I remember.
This is like his territory, his territory down here. And this is where he's lived his whole life. And just like every fucking time, whenever I worked Monster, whenever it was just, you know, we had some beef back in the day. We didn't even necessarily know each other, Schmitty, but it was like, I think like the skateboard industry wanted that to happen. It was like one of those things where like every interview I got was like, so who's a better skater, you or Wee Man? It was like they never asked me anything else, but like they always wanted to compare us to. And then they were always like, who do you think would win in a fight, you or him? They were always like, it was just always like this like conflict that they wanted us, these two dudes, to have. And all we wanted to do was skateboard. And it kind of sucked, you know? And so when there was a little beef between us, and when I first moved down here, like after living down here for a few years, the first thing I did was I looked him up and I got his number and I called him and I invited him to lunch. And, you know, we squashed everything. We laughed about everything.
How cool.
And so we're friends now, but it was just such a weird skateboarding. Like, it was just such a weird thing, the way they try to like put you against each other.
Yeah.
At least in my experience.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, but it's all good, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because I think if anything, now it's made us friends, you know?
Dinklage has got to, like, produce a movie and make something, like, I don't know.
It would help out
the community or something.
Yeah, something, you know? I think everybody kind of, like, at least the little people I know down here, which is a fucking lot of them now.
Yeah.
Like, I never met one little person but Wee Man in my entire life.
Wow.
Then I moved down here and I'm auditioning with fucking four of these fuckers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they're all different sizes. Like, and I'm like one of the tallest ones. Can you believe that I didn't book the role one time because they said I was too tall for it?
Oh, my God.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Wow, dude.
Dude, I'm serious.
Oh, man.
Like, so that, like, I laughed so hard about that. It was like, what the fuck? Like, my skateboard buddies would be laughing at this shit.
Yeah.
But I feel like everyone's got to create their own path, and I think I'm doing the same thing for some people. It's shorter, like their journey, but for me, it's a little longer, and
yeah,
you know,
just
I'm just
do
learning.
You.
Do me, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I always do is I just try to get better. I try not to compare myself to anyone but myself.
Yeah.
Like if I keep getting better, that's all I can do. Give it your best, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Hey, this crazy guy is on the phone right now. He just gave us a call for the last question of the day.
Uh-oh, who is it?
Poncho, I got a question for you because I knew when you made it, and you'd already made it for a while, but when we were in Germany, and Jeff Rowley looks at you and goes, "Hey, Poncho!" And we're on top of the ramps, the street course at the contest. That's when I knew you'd made it, when Rowley comes up and you're just one of the guys. You guys must have already went on your Volcom tour. They called you Wee Man, the whole article. I was probably more pissed off about that than you were. You got a Volcom article, and they don't even respect you, and they call you Wee Man.
He's still the same.
Guess what? It was probably Trans World, and they did it to me, too. A cover with somebody else's name. So I get it. Anyways, my question is, when did you know that you had made it? When you were like, yes, this is it. Poncho did it. Because there's always a day where you know. I think mine was when the dude threw the Trans World cover down to me. Tell you the truth, even though it was the wrong name, I didn't care. It was me on the cover. That's when I knew I made it, sitting next to Ellington at the skate shop, and the Asian guy threw it to me. When was the day you knew that Poncho was big time? Thank you.
Oh, man. It was so good to hear that dude's voice.
I loved him.
Oh, my God. See, that's what I went on tour with. That was him. Like, that's why I was so attracted to him. You know, it was just so, like, oh, man, you just wanted to be around him.
Mm.
It was so awesome. To answer your question, Tim McKinney, the time I knew I made it was, I think, going on my first Think Tour, you know, and just being with all the guys, and we were just all a family, and we were just, it was just so surreal to be able to, like, just travel the world or travel the U.S. even, and you're getting to skate all these different places, and these kids want your autograph, and you're just wanting to skate, and it was just such a awesome feeling. I think the first time I ever went on a Think Tour was the first time I ever knew I made it.
Sick.
You know, that's when I realized, like, okay, this is where I want to be.
Fuck
this
yeah.
is like when you realize where you want to be, like, and this is home for me, and I love these people. Like, that's when I knew I made it.
What was your first pro graphic?
I think it was something super stupid. My first pro graphic was like, I think it was like a kid playing a video game or something. But my favorite pro graphic was like the Lord of the Rings ones or the Poncho Mon one.
Oh, those
were like my
Pokemon.
Yeah, the Pokemon Poncho Mon.
Yeah, and then they had the Smurf one with like Duffy, all the riders. Holy shit. Those were my favorite.
I didn't really like kind of like, I think they started coming up with better ideas for my graphics as I, you know, started to as they started kind of figuring me out. And then, because I think when I first turned pro for Think was when they were going through the era of like everyone had the same kind of
series.
Yeah. And then it was like, you know, wah.
Were you on the team when they had the one where it was just like you on, everyone had their photo on the bottom?
Oh, it was the
and
worst.
And Jehovah was doing a bail.
Mine was, I forgot what it was, probably like a nollie heel flip, but it was like a green board.
Yeah,
that is right. It was awful.
Fuck.
Jehovah was bailing.
Oh, Jehovah was
bailing. I miss that guy. Do you ever see him?
Yeah, I'm going to see him right now, actually.
Where?
San Diego? Escondido, yeah.
Wait, does he live down there?
Yeah. He's got like a big bowl in his backyard. And
oh, my God.
Yeah. He said to say hello, actually. Is that who you're going to stay with? Yeah. Well, I'm staying in Ramona for the first two nights for the contest, and then I'll stay with Dan on the way out.
Tell him I said hello, and I love him, man. And, Tuck, you got to give me McKenny's number. I want to talk to him.
Oh, absolutely.
I thought he was going to ask something really shitty.
No, he
was like, so when did you first learn the nollie heel?
He said, I couldn't remember the question. Maybe you'll remember this. He said something about you and Shoemaker sleeping together and not together, but you guys were in the same room.
Oh, yeah.
Something.
No, that's when me and Butch lived together. Because Shoemaker moved in after Butch.
Oh, okay.
So he moved in the top bunk where Butch used to sleep. And then we lived in that place for like another like fucking like 8 months to a year. And then we moved out. And then that's when I moved in with Fuenzalita.
There must have been a crazy experience you had with Shoemaker in that period that McKenny knew about. Because I didn't remember what it was, but he was like, you gotta ask him about this Shoemaker, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, he was going.
Yeah.
But
I mean, we had plenty of crazy experiences. I can't really think of like the one he would be thinking about because there was lots of shit that happened at that tool shed.
You remember Coco showing up with The Rock?
Oh my God. Yes. That was when like things were going really downhill for Coco.
Yeah.
Is he still around?
I haven't seen him. Jake would see him occasionally. I think, I don't know.
This is my friend, The Rock.
Yeah. Fuck, dude.
Dude, you posted up some awesome footage about a few months ago. No, about 8 months ago. And it was like
from that video.
Remember where I'm like, yeah, I'm probably the best on the team.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But you took that out, but there was still that footage.
Did I find it? I was looking for it. I got a guy digitizing all my tapes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Awesome, man.
I want to find that one that was like the promo.
Yeah.
And the light bulb explodes.
Yeah, because I remember that even
I think I'm the best.
At the Bryant Street. Remember we did that line with the nose slide on that tall edge to big spin out? And
yeah.
Then backside Healy?
Yeah.
Backside Healy.
Backside Healy. No fakie train.
Remember Annie Hawk too?
Yeah.
Dude.
Dude,
we did so
for
much.
The girls' night at the park. Shout out to Butcher.
Shout out to Butcher. Shout out to Danny Fuenzalita.
Shout out.
Jake Nunn.
Shout out.
Oh, yeah.
Greg Carroll. Greg C.
Shout out.
Greg C. Zach Martin.
Shout out. Ears.
Oh, Wicked Ears. Wicked Ears works at a hat shop down there.
Oh, he does?
Reach Hats.
Does he run it or something?
I don't know. He does something. He's like a pivotal guy. You know, he's like Greg C's assistant. I don't know. What was it like when you turned pro, really? Like, was there a surprise? Do you remember that moment? Because I think that would be kind of the answer partially to Tim's question is like just getting your first pro model like, I have arrived, that feeling.
You know what? Like, I was getting paid when I was, like, sponsored. And that's just kind of how it was. Like, by the time, you know, like, they wanted to keep, like, you know, their amateur skaters happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, they wanted to keep them surviving because you're putting all your time and effort into this team. And for me, it was just traveling, man. Like, just being able to do what I love and doing it with, like, my friends,
right.
You know, I mean, skateboarding was just about progression and being with your friends and having fun. That's what it was about for me. And that's when I knew that I found something that I loved.
Right.
And something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. But when you're that young, you don't ever think of things ending, especially skateboarding, because you're young, you're hungry, you have that drive. And, you know, as you get older, things slowly start to deteriorate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was my back.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
But didn't Cardiel have some gnarly like back injury and now is he skating again?
He can skate a little bit.
That dude was gnarly.
Yeah.
fucking gnarly.
God damn. Well, dude, this meant the world to me. Super stoked to be able to get together with you.
Yeah.
Fucking those days that we had together, like I always hold dear in my heart. Oh. Like me, you, Butcher, Greg C., talking shit on each other, talking shit on people not in the room. It was just McKenny's floor.
Remember Jones?
Jones. Jones is still selling stuff at the flea market. He's still got his shit down there. Yeah, but holy shit. Yeah, thank you so much. And maybe we'll get out of here to that Cougar song.
Okay.
Yeah. What was the name of it?
Walk Tall.
Here it is, Walk Tall. This is Poncho Mueller, kids. What are the movies coming out?
One's called Candy Corn, the other one's called Three from Hell, and the other one's called Santa Fake. Check them
out. I'll be watching it. I think Drehoba already has an advanced copy.
Oh, yeah?
Love you, Poncho. Thank you.
Love you too, man. Thanks, buddy. Dude, awesome, man.
Simple-minded and the uninformed can be easily led astray. And those that cannot connect the dots, hey, look the other way. People believe what they want to believe when it makes no sense at all. And I wish you all along sideline and the strength to walk tall. Walk tall. It's the death of you and me. Even though we don't think of it much, it's still out there for us to see. If you treat your life like a ballroom fight, you die staying in a gym. No drunkards allowed in heaven, no sinners will get in. Walk tall.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talkin' Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow up them charts. All the episodes will always remain free to my listeners, but if you'd like to help support the show, you can do so at our website, talkinschmidt.com, where you can pick up some merchandise like stickers, beanies, t-shirts, or hats. The website has an entire archive of all the episodes with extra photos and video. You can also email me with any concerns, questions, suggestions, comments, etc. at talkinschmidt@gmail.com. That's talkinschmidt, talkinschmidt, @gmail.com. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by me, Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature, and a special shout out goes to my executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it!
Until next week, this is Talkin' Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.
Talkin' Schmidt. Talkin' Schmidt. Talkin' Schmidt.